If people are dieting now more than ever before, then why are nearly 1 in 3 American adults overweight? Dr. Gundry, who's helped thousands lose weight and feel younger and healthier than ever, says most people are not getting enough fat-burning MCTs from their food. MCTs are a special kind of compound that, instead of turning into fat when you consume it, turns into ketones, which is a chemical that breaks down the excess fat in your body. So, by getting more MCTs in your diet, you essentially flip a switch that puts your body in caloric bypass mode, which can flush out excess fat and calories. And he's created an easy way for you to activate caloric bypass right at home. It's called MCT Wellness. This powerful blend of fat-flushing MCT powders and antioxidant-rich polyphenols is designed to help you unlock your body's fat-burning, energy-producing potential. What's even better is that it's a delicious drink. I love how incredible it tastes. All you do is add a scoop to water, enjoy, and watch as you start feeling slimmer and more energized. So, if you want to experience a quick, easy, and effective way to melt pounds fast, go to GundryMD.com/energy and order right now to get up to 53% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. Again, that's GundryMD.com/energy.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly, but then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Welcome back to another episode of Open Floor. I'm Rohan Nadkarni, joined today by my good friend, Michigan man, Chicago man, Sports Illustrated senior writer, the author of the New York Times best-selling book, Blood in the Garden, Chris Herring. Chris, how's it going, buddy?
I'm good. I'm soon to be New York man. About to move back to New York, I think.
Wait, what? What?
Yeah, didn't realize I hadn't told you that.
What?
Me and the significant other have been looking at, who are long distance, we've been looking at apartments.
Bro,
and
didn't you just buy the condo you're sitting in?
Hey, man, love will make you do some crazy things, including, like, look at your condo and be like, yeah, I guess I'll put it up for rent. But yeah,
bro,
I just
let's talk.
This.
Maybe I'll move to Chicago.
Oh, so you could have my condo?
Yeah. I think it'd be a good podcast bit if you were my landlord.
This podcast is off the rails 24 seconds in. Lord.
Our apologies to Daryl Swenson, who wants us to get
we
to
have to be his
right
least
away.
Favorite podcast at this point. Like, we can't stay on task for anything.
That's hilarious. I think it would be funny if you were my landlord. We just did a segment every week, you know?
Oh, it sounds like a sitcom.
Hot water wasn't, yeah, it really does.
I become a slumlord.
Yeah. Oh, no. Oh, man.
Goodness gracious.
Well, okay. News to me that you're moving. All right.
Breaking news. Yeah.
Wow. All right. Very exciting. We'll have to unpack that later. Wow, I'm shocked right now. I'm flustered. I had a whole plan of all these things going on because we were catching up before we started.
We were.
Episode. Not that it would have come up, but I'm okay. Wow.
Sorry.
Well, good for you. No, hey, it's all good, man. It's all good. Chris, so much stuff to get to today, and I'm excited because there's really just all basketball things that I want to talk about, like fun basketball things that we get to talk about today. You know, I think we're getting a little bit out of some of the drama that's been dominating the storylines this season. I guess that's partly our fault, but there have been a lot of good hoops this season. And I want to start with, you know, I texted you this week. I was like, hey, man, what are you most excited about that you want to talk about on the pod? And listen, you brought up the team that's capturing the imagination of the basketball viewing public. It's time for Open Floor to light the beam It's time to talk about the Sacramento Kings. Just the offensive juggernaut that's emerged in Sacramento. They score 153 points against the Nets earlier this week. Put up another crooked number on the Spurs Thursday night. We're recording this Friday. They've been awesome. This has been, I think, a really interesting team. I think there was a little bit of hype, not hype, but people loved the Mike Brown hire over the summer. I think people were really excited about what he could bring this team. I think a full year of Fox and Sabonis definitely had potential. They added guys, you know, Keegan Murray, Malik Monk, Kevin Huerter, especially in the offseason, that have been interesting. But Chris, I want to open up the floor for you. I know you've been really excited watching this team closely. What makes you most excited about the Kings at the moment?
I mean, it's a number of things, really. It's the fact that they have some of the most fun lineups in the league. I mean, they've played fast for years. That's really not unusual. But I think the kind of the combination of shooting that they've got makes them really fun. Huerter has been a fantastic addition for them. I think it's fit really well. Keegan Murray.
Sabonis at center has been awesome.
Yeah, it has. Yeah. And I mean, like, it's been cool to kind of see him just bully people the last several games where, you know, Fox has had really good vision for the last few games, too, where he's hitting guys with some crazy angles on passes and stuff like that. They have some real bounce on this team. Like, they've essentially benched Rashawn Holmes, but they have all these other guys.
Which is crazy. He's good.
I mean, like, I remember it wasn't this year that we were going to put him in our top 100, but it was last year. And I think it was Jeremy Wu who, you know, shout out to Wu. I will not call him a voice of reason because I normally disagree with this man on
Wu
most rankings.
Wu is a voice of unreason, okay? Wu is an agent of chaos. He's Pina's neck in the group chat, dude.
Yes. But I will say this, though. Like, and he raised a good question last year because I want to say, like, okay, whatever. If you've got
Kings in the top 100. Yeah.
Right. If you have five or six guys from the Warriors in the top 100, that's one thing. They're the Warriors. We had like six or seven from the Kings, and the Kings, as everyone knows, have the longest running playoff drought in NBA history. And so, you know, it's weird. I think it's okay potentially to have like more than the sum of your parts as far as, it's one thing to have more guys on your team that are talented that aren't actually, you know, like a good fit. But we had so many guys on the list where we was like, we should probably cut this off somewhere. Like, do you guys really believe that strongly in Rashawn Holmes? Because I think we had him like 97th last year. And it is quite a tumble to like not even see him in a rotation.
Yeah.
But this is a team that could potentially be a winning team. And maybe not everybody fits winning basketball. And Rashawn Holmes certainly has holes in his game. So looking at guys like Shemezi Metu, Terrence Davis has looked fit. Like, he's been...
Oh, he's balling.
Some of the stuff he's
man.
Done, like... Some of the stuff he's done with the ball and just kind of the moves he's made.
31 on the Nets. Yep,
he did. He had like he's had a couple nasty spin moves. It's just a really, really fun team. We haven't even mentioned Harrison Barnes, who's kind of been a rock for them. It's a fun team that looks like they have the potential to be more than just a fun team. I mean, obviously, we could talk about the defense and the fact that there's still plenty to be desired there. But it is a team that's interesting. It is a team that Mike Brown seems like he's getting a decent amount out of. They do play track meet basketball. But at the same time, they do I want to say I looked at it a couple days ago. I haven't looked to see if it still holds true. But I think that they have one of the most efficient transition defenses in basketball. Like that they're very low in terms of how many fast break points they give up despite the fact that they play so fast, which is interesting and very much seems like a Mike Brown sort of thing as far as, look, I want you guys to have fun, but don't let certain things slip as far as the effort.
Right.
And it does feel like the effort is there. Even when they do get beat defensively, they're pushing to hit back offensively before the other team has even gotten back. But the shooting just really stands out. The athleticism stands out. Virtually everybody on this team can shoot it. And it makes them a really, really difficult team to guard when four guys can shoot, and then your fifth guy is Sabonis, you know, a really good passer and a really good hub of your offense. So it's been really entertaining to watch them play. It does feel like there's something a little bit different there for now, but it's still early, so we'll see.
So a few things here. First of all, they are currently seventh in net rating, ahead of teams like the Sixers, the Nuggets, the Blazers, the Hawks, the Wolves, the Grizzlies. The list goes on. The Heat, the Clippers, the Warriors. I mean, it's crazy. They have the fifth worst defense, and they still have the seventh best net rating, which gives you an idea of how insane their offense has been. It's second only to the Celtics. They have some crazy, funky lineups. One to keep an eye on, this lineup's played very little together, but Barnes, Sabonis, Fox, Herter, Davis, in 23 minutes, has a 25.3 net. The starting lineup of Barnes, Sabonis, Fox, Herter, Keegan Murray, 16.5 net in 118 minutes. That's a good lineup. I mean, that's a
fantastic lineup for them so far.
And that's a representative sample size, at least for this early in the season. It's legit. You brought up a couple of things. Sabonis, he's long been one of my favorite guys to watch. He's like pound for pound one of the strongest post players in the league. He brings it every night. Like, there's nobody he's not afraid to post up. Like, he'll bang down low. He's one of the more physical players in the league, and I wish more players played with his physicality. To me, it's really fun to watch. I love watching guys operate in the post, and like, yeah, man, he is bringing it into people's chest in the restricted area every night in a way that strongest guys in the league, whether it's Bam Adebayo, Draymond Green, whoever it is, like, he's not afraid to go. You know, he's got that wiry strength that's really impressive to watch. You mentioned Herter. I remember when the Hawks made the Murray trade, I told our good buddy Michael Pina, I was like, what bothers me about this is I know they're going to make a cost-cutting move, and that bothers me. Sure enough, they trade Herter soon after because they don't want to pay everyone. And you could argue, sure, would Herter have a place in Atlanta's rotation? You know, they want to duck the luxury tax. Dude, he's been lights out.
He's 5'10 from three. 51% from three on seven attempts per game. Seven attempts per game, and this man is shooting 51% from three.
He's not shooting wide open catch and shoots, man. No. He's coming off screens, rising, launching. Like, it's been incredible. And the Hawks just, it was a salary dump trade. I mean, you know, they got Holiday back, and, you know, he's been fine for them, but it's pretty incredible. And yeah, and they're shooting a big purple light into the sky every time they win. like that's awesome. Yeah. You mentioned they play fast. I mean, it feels like I don't know if they necessarily have an identity just yet. And it's funny to think that a Mike Brown team is like this bad on defense, but I think they're 8-6. It still feels like we're not at the real part of the season yet.
It does, a little bit.
I was watching the Warriors-Suns game the other night, and they were showing the worst record for defending champs to start a season, first 15 games. Like, I totally forgotten the Bucks started 7-8 last year. Then obviously the Bucks turned into the Bucks, but I hope this sticks because it's truly been a ton of fun.
It really has. I mean, I think there's some aspects of this that feel real enough to me because, you know, like you said, whether there's an identity, whether we've had enough of a representative sample size. I mean, their starting lineup has been out there most nights. I think Murray was out the last game. But, you know, they've been out there from game to game at this point. Their rebounding stuff looks real enough to me. They're the second best defensive rebounding team in the league percentage-wise. Because they have so much shooting, they're one of the worst offensive rebounding teams in the league. But, I mean, it, like you said, it's their offense. If they could even start to look somewhat average defensively, they become actually a really, really interesting team.
Yeah.
Because if they can score like this or anywhere close to this, they're first in the league in two-point percentage. They're sixth in the league in three-point percentage. And like we just said, Kevin Herter is shooting lights out. Now, granted, that won't keep up. No one is going to shoot 51% from three on seven shots a game. Harrison Barnes is at 25%. You've got other guys, you know, Domantas Sabonis is not taking a bunch of threes, but he's under 30%. So you've got some guys on this team that should kind of progress to the mean. Kevin Huerter obviously is going to regress to the mean a little bit. Mm-hmm. Keegan Murray might be a swing guy for them, but he's someone that has been solid so far and is going to put up enough threes on his own as well. So there's a lot of aspects of this that feel legitimate. Domantas Sabonis with this kind of space, we have to speak to the fact that he's probably able to bully guys a little bit differently with this sort of space. He was making Poeltl look kind of flimsy in the post. Now, on the flip side of that, Poeltl, I believe, had like a career game himself. But that said, I mean, this team has a chance to be great offensively. Even if they regress some, they still can be a top 10 offense easily. And we're not always used to seeing that. You know, we're used to seeing them be bottom five defensively. But if they can balance that, and even if they're a neutral team with a great offense and a really bad defense, some aspects of that, you can win games that way. And by the way, they have won. Part of the reason I found them to be so interesting all year is that they've played in a lot of close games so far.
Yeah, and they've had good wins.
Yeah, they've played in 11 clutch scenarios so far. They've won six of them, but they've only, I mean, they're 8-6. So they've basically every game they've had, with the exception of the last two that were just blowouts, every game they've had has gone down to the last couple minutes. And I think there's something to the idea of even though they play at the pace they play at, when you have this much shooting and you get in clutch situations, you don't have to play ISO ball. Or even if you are, and you send two guys at Fox or something like that, or you want to run a second man at him, he's going to be able to beat you with the pass. And you've watched him do that at times, even when he's throwing just rockets into Sabonis in the post and whatnot. But it's a really interesting team that I'm certainly curious to watch more. I was telling you off the air that I kind of got in trouble. I didn't get in trouble, but I was literally so excited about the way this team looked, even before the Nets win, that I actually like booked a flight to Sacramento without running it by our bosses, and was going, like, literally showed up at the airport like ready to fly there to cover this 3-game homestand until I realized I haven't talked to our bosses about this,
and then you were You needed to see the beam. You were like, You were just following the purple light in the sky, brother.
It's the most interested I'd been to just kind of go watch a team. Part of it is too that when you see something that just looks really interesting and different, you want to see it up close. You want to, you know, it's one thing to see it on TV. You want to talk to the guys about how they're doing it, what they're seeing. And they've got some interesting personalities. And Huerter is kind of an interesting guy. He's really outspoken, which I've really liked that about talking to him in the past. Mm-hmm. And so you kind of get better insight by talking to them on top of watching it in person, talking to the coaches. But I hope to get there sometime this season. I hope that we do more on them because they, you know, they really, really are interesting. And not all of it feels fluky to me. And I think that that's intriguing too.
And I just want to say I'm really happy for De'Aaron Fox, because I think 2 years ago,
me too,
he's playing at an all-star level. Last year, he kind of takes a step back. They trade Halliburton. You know, Halliburton's been great to start the season. And again, it's kind of a referendum on that trade. And, you know, should they have kept him over Fox, blah, blah, blah. I mean, Fox has been playing outstanding. There's a lot of guards in the West this year are going to be deserving of an all-star spot.
Yeah.
We talked about Shai Gilgeous-Alexander on Monday. He's only continued to be fantastic. So I don't know if Fox is going to make the team, but he's been playing at a great level, man. And I'm just happy for him, because a few years ago, I really thought he was going to be a rising star in this league. Like, the three-point shot looked like it was coming together. He's so fast. He's such an exciting guy to watch. And, you know, it was sad that so much of it, kind of the conversation around him, I'm probably guilty of it, had become, oh, they kept the wrong guy, or, you know, Kings being the Kings. But he's been a really good man. And, like, you mentioned, you know, making the right pass. Like, he's been a good point guard for them, too.
I'll say this, having watched their game last night and just the reactions after the game. I mean, obviously the win over the Nets, a team that's been in the news a lot and, you know, may not be a contender. I think if I had to lean one way or the other on the Nets right now, I'm certainly not picking them as a contender with all the issues that they've had off the court. And maybe some of them will, you know, will crop back up now that Kyrie is going to be back pretty soon. But But I will say that, you know, that was a big win. That was a national TV game for them. And so you always wonder with something like that, like, how does the team respond? You know, do they kind of get high on their own supply after that? Because this is new for the Kings. And last night they come out and they're just on fire again. They have a massive 40-point, what was it, third quarter. And the whole time you're just watching De'Aaron Fox just grin from ear to ear. He's doing the post-game interview. He's happy. He's smiling. He's hugging his coaches. He's hugging he's hugging Vivek. I'm just watching it, and I'm like, yo, the vibes feel really different in Sacramento right now. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'd have to look back at, you know, their year-by-year record to start the seasons, but this has to be one of the better starts they've had since that year where Boogie got mono, and then they fired Michael Malone, seemingly prematurely.
God, that feels like a different universe that Michael Malone used to be the Kings coach.
Yeah, he's the only guy. He's the only guy. What is the stat on him that he's the only guy that's coached them, lost his job, and then resurfaced somewhere else, I think is what it is. Or either that or that's still in the league of all the guys they fired in terms of being a head coach. And not to mention that Rick Adelman is the only guy in Kings history, I guess aside from Mike Brown right now, that has a winning record as the team's head coach. Just insane to think about.
Shout out to Mike Brown, too, who everyone loves, rightfully so. Just a really solid dude. And it's not easy. You know, there's only such few head coaching jobs in the league. And Mike Brown's had, you know, it was his second stint in Cleveland. He wasn't in a great spot. And, you know, he takes this Kings job. I'm sure it's not easy leaving the Warriors for a job like the Kings. And
absolutely.
He's put his stamp there, and it's been really incredible, man. Shout out to the King. Shout out to the Beam in the Sky. Shout out to De'Aaron Fox. Shout out to Vivek, who is finally making it okay to be an Indian team owner again. after some, like, that was like a not all representation is good representation situation for a little while. Him and the ball don't stop guy. Anyway,
moving on.
I want to talk about another one of the incredibly hot offenses in the NBA, and it brings me no pleasure to talk about this team as loyal listeners of this podcast know. I even had to write about them this week. It made me sick. The Boston Celtics, who... You want to talk about offense, brother. They currently have the best offense in NBA history. That's how good the Boston Celtics have been. 119.2 offensive rating. The defense, after, you know, they beat up on a couple of not so great teams here. It's been in the bottom third of the league. It's creeping up to 16th, even though the defense hasn't been great this year. But 119.2 offensive rating. The Celtics have the number one net rating in the NBA. We haven't talked about them much so far this season. You know, the first week of the season, I watched their offense, and there's just no holes. You know, and it's not like they're running. It's not like they give Tatum the ball at the top of the key and say, okay, Jason, run 30 pick and roll. Not necessarily.
Right.
No, it's, you know, Smart is playing point guard. I love what they do. Tatum coming off screens on the wing. They'll run this, like, great set where, like, him... It reminds me of like when wide receivers are in like a bunch formation in the NFL. Like they'll have Horford, Jaylen Brown, and Jason Tatum just kind of in a bunch on the wing. And it's like one of them's cutting to the hoop, one of them's coming around a screen to the perimeter. And like defenses have messed up that action so many times. And you can't give these guys an inch of space. And their starting lineup, you know, Derek White was shooting 40% from three this week. Like, you can't. He's the guy that teams are supposed to be able to cheat off of. They're not cheating off of him. Tatum has been unreal.
MVP grounded. So far.
Yeah, I think it's Doncic, but I mean, But I think Tatum. If the Celtics continue on this pace, I think Tatum's going to win. And we already know that the Celtics media, they'll get the machine going and they'll get the misinformation out there. But he'll actually deserve it. He'll actually deserve it this season.
I think there's a narrative too. I mean, like,
yes, absolutely.
You know, from the standpoint of all the craziness the Celtics had, which, you know, had nothing to do with their players, I don't think.
Right.
More so just the Ime Udoka situation. Yeah. But, you know, I do think that there's some of that, that, you know, how does that look after specifically the last coach was able to get these guys on the same page because he spoke so directly to them, and then he's not there. You bring in an assistant. It had the potential to go off the rails in the same way that, granted, the Warriors, it's certainly a different situation, but they have not had a good start to their season. It could have been very easy for the Celtics. Not to mention that I think Joe Mazzulla has changed a handful of things about this team. They have played without Robert Williams, so their defense doesn't look the same. So to get the offensive production that you have out of Tatum, I think, speaks volumes about him. But also their record, for now at least, is better. And that was one of the things I looked at with did a roundtable that I think is up now on Sports Illustrated, where we were asked the question, like, who would be your MVP so far? Doncic is a fine choice. Like, you can't really debate it. But their record just isn't where the Celtics is.
And no,
it would have been easy to think the Celtics would have fallen off.
No, I think we did a podcast before the season started. I did it with Ben Golliver, and I said, is the Celtics window closed? I mean, I wasn't being completely serious, but there's something you said about, can a team lose a coach as one as important as Udoka was and be as good? And they've been fantastic, man. They've been so good. I'm with you. I do think Tatum is definitely going to be in the top three of the MVP conversation all season long. And if he continues at this pace, I would bet on him to win. The reason I want to bring up the Celtics, and I think something really fascinating is brewing here. Boston's offense, like I said, it's been incredible. Their catch and shoot numbers are insane. Like, Grant Williams was also shooting like 48% from three. I don't have the latest numbers, but, you know, I wrote the story, I think, for Wednesday. Like, him, Horford, Derek White, those guys were all shooting at least 40%. Brogdon was at like 38%.
Sam Hauser.
Oh my God. Pina was dropping in Sam Hauser stats the other day. That guy's on cloud nine. I don't even want to acknowledge the Hauser propaganda. I mean,
he's the one taking the most, he's taking the most threes of anyone on that team per 100 possessions, and he's drilling them.
He's over 50%
fit with them. So, I mean, it's basically what we were saying before about Herter, except, you know, granted, someone that it doesn't play as much as Herter, but it's still on a team where everybody else is contributing that way. Particularly with some of the injuries that they've had, you'll absolutely take it. And again, we'll see regression to the mean, but it just feels like everybody they plug in is a great fit.
Another thing is, even if their offense regresses, like, I don't know if they'll finish as the best offense in NBA history. The thing is, it just makes sense on paper when you look at it, because the shooting is so good. And if Jalen and Jason beat their one-on-one matchup, your defense is screwed. Like, once you get caught in a rotation against these guys, they swing the ball so well. But even if the offense gets worse, then they get Robert Williams back, and that changes their defensive ceiling from what it is now. But what's interesting to me is the Celtics have this incredible offense. Meanwhile, I looked this up today. Do you know what the defensive rating of Milwaukee starting five is with Brooke Lopez, Giannis, Holiday, and Grayson Allen?
If I had to guess, because where do they rank team-wide on their D rating? They're not the top team in the league anymore.
They are. They're still number one at 104.9.
So I'm assuming that their bench falls off quite a bit. So that starting five has to be like high 80s, low 90s.
89.2, Chris. Ooh, 89. That was really, you were right there, brother.
So I'd looked at it a couple weeks ago. I can't remember. But that's insane.
Lopez, Holiday, Antetokounmpo, Allen, Javon Carter, who's been great. 89.3, 27.6 net in 90 minutes. Unbelievable defensive lineup. We could seriously see like one of the best modern defenses and one of the best modern offenses of all time in the playoffs with the Bucks and Celtics.
I can't wait for them to be
full
strength.
I need it right now.
Full strength. Middleton. Robert Williams. Please give it to me. Please.
I'm literally salivating. I texted our group chat the other day. Like, I think that Bucks Celtics could end up being the quote unquote real finals this year. Yeah. But I wanted to ask, because I think we went into the season, we were like, hey, like Toronto could be really good. And like they've been impressive at times. Philly, you know, they've had the injuries to Embiid and Harden. Now Embiid is playing and he's been a monster. But, you know, they got off to a slow start the season even when both guys were healthy. Brooklyn, no one ever knows what to think about them. Now Kyrie's back in the mix. Do you feel like the East is already a two-team race?
I mean, from the standpoint of at this moment, it sure looks like that. I'd like to see a little bit more play out. I mean, I think Toronto is interesting. I'm not ready to write off Miami yet, although obviously it's not been a fun start for them.
Well, I've been avoiding the heat on this podcast. Oh man.
I'm not really ready. I'll put it this way, just to shorten it, because I feel like I could talk about four or five different teams. I think that we're going to see ebbs and flows. We already have in the West to some extent with a team like Utah, even, for instance.
Yeah,
like,
I mean, Cleveland. Look at Cleveland teams. Has been, yeah.
Right, you know, and a lot of it has...
Can I just say real quick, Jamie Bickerstaff saying they had a fat cat mentality is one of my favorite quotes of all time.
I mean, like, can we also be real, too, that, like... My expectations when Donovan Mitchell is not playing for them.
Yes, yes.
Particularly when he looks like an MVP candidate and then he's not there. Like, we can also be honest.
That's just great. That's great coaching, though. Come on.
You can definitely. Yeah. I've watched coaches do that where they make the overly harsh comments to try to get their team's attention. But I mean, that's a very good example of what we're talking about, where it's like, I don't know what those things are called, but sometimes you look at those tweets that are like, videos, but all it is like they're chart graphs, and they show a sliding scale of like the leading scores of all time throughout history, and the scales go back and forth because at one point in history you had Dr. J, and then you know, and then Michael comes along and then he eclipses everybody. So you're gonna have the sliding scale of teams that look good, teams that look bad for a five game stretch. We haven't really seen it yet with Milwaukee. We haven't really quite seen it yet with Boston. But you're going to, you know, we have seen it with Cleveland now. Toronto now is without Siakam. So you're going to have teams that go through this, just like we're seeing it in the West, where I'm pretty sure at some point Golden State will probably figure it out. We've seen Utah look good, and now we've seen them kind of slide down a little bit. It's just a matter of when those things happen, particularly for the teams that we expect to be contenders. Philly has looked good lately without Harden, but they're going to get Harden back at some point. So, I mean, there's not to say there's not questions to be asked about some things like that, about whether there are benefits and not
the Nets have looked good without Kyrie. Yeah.
Right. And then they got blasted by Sacramento. So
they did, but you know what? I thought Simmons started to wake up in that Sacramento game, and then he had probably the best game in a couple years last night.
He did, and he has. So, I mean, there's all sorts of stuff, but even that, we've got such a small relative sample size, all things considered, particularly with these teams that are still new look or missing a key guy. And maybe sometimes you won't see, maybe it's like a stone or a diamond where like you turn it from a different angle and something looks shinier for a while. So I'm curious, is it a two-team race long-term? Like, I do think those happen to be the two best teams. I wouldn't be surprised if for a moment, if a team or two looks way better and looks like they're capable of challenging. We just saw Boston knock the socks off Atlanta the other day, but Atlanta also has put together a pretty good record despite not really shooting well at all this season. And so there's that. John Collins is apparently on the trade block, if that's the case. And so there's a lot of things that could shift the way this looks a little bit, where I feel like it's a little bit too early, but going into the season, we probably just talent-wise would have said Boston and Milwaukee. And probably that feels solidified a little bit now, but it's still early. And who knows? Because our tune on this might also change. If, like, let's say Middleton comes back and then gets hurt again, I don't know that I'm picking Milwaukee in that circumstance anymore.
Right.
Even though they've looked good without him, like it's a different case, as we saw when Drew Holiday has to take 29 shots a game in the playoffs.
Drew Holiday, don't want that. No matter how many shots he takes, he's making seven. He's either going 7 of 7 or 7 of 27.
I don't want that shot diet. It doesn't mean they can't potentially win that way, but I don't want to watch it. You know, I don't want to watch that happen. So.
Bro, but it's really crazy to think they have an 89.2 defensive rating And they might replace Grayson Allen with Chris Middleton. That's insane.
It's scary hours. Scary hours is the only way to put it. So I'm really, really excited for those teams to get full strength. I know I said that before, but it's I need it. I need that to happen. I'll put it that way.
Before we move on, I just want to say one more thing about Boston real quick. It's impressive, man. Like what Joe Mazzulla has done, like, you know, we wrote that roundtable today. You mentioned who's the coach of the year. I said it's still got to be Will Hardy at the moment, but
me too.
I think Mazzulla, man. I mean, you said it. It's not like he just said, "Okay, go do exactly what you're doing last season." Like he's clearly found a way to unlock this offense. I think they play with such good movement. Man, Al Horford, like everyone, is just playing so well, like so locked in. So focused. It's so impressive to me that they, you know, like they feel like the one team, like outside of maybe Milwaukee, that came into the season like, okay, it's business time. You know what I mean? Like it feels like a lot of teams, you know, it's had this weird start to the season. We're still unsure. I mean, look at Golden State, who we're going to get to in a second, but just the degree to which they are locked in to start this season is so impressive.
Yeah. And I mean, it's crazy because we've seen it a couple of times now where, frankly, a lot of people have kind of wondered how Phoenix would look to start this season. Mm-hmm. They had all sorts of offseason stuff themselves with Sarver, the blasting.
I'm impressed with Phoenix, man.
Yeah. And I mean, to be honest with you, you know, I figured they would be maybe like a fourth seed. You know, I didn't think they'd fall off the table, but they brought virtually everybody back. But then you factor in the Crowder situation, the Sarver situation being the biggest of all of them, but also the fact that like there seems to be maybe not the greatest relationship with Ayton and Monty Williams. Chris Paul has been banged up. So there are different things that could have taken them out this year. But the truth is they battled all year last year through the Sarver investigation last year and went on a 17 or 18 game winning streak in the midst of it. So... You know, like teams, give teams credit, and even Utah, for that matter. Last year, a team that had been, you know, beaten in the playoffs in a series that a lot of people felt like they should have won, or basically, you know, a team that people thought should have won because they had the best record in the league that year. They came back and had a perfectly fine start to the season. So teams, you know, teams generally speaking, I think that they're pretty durable from the standpoint of, it's still the game of basketball. If a team is good, if they've got talent, as long as they're coached well, Quinn Snyder certainly is a good coach. Monty Williams is certainly a good coach. You can normally rely on a team to kind of go out and do their job. That's what makes the team we're about to talk about so interesting.
Yeah.
Is that Steve Kerr, I consider to be a very good coach.
Yep.
I think he speaks bluntly. I think he tries different things. He's more experimental than I think most coaches are. It's how we even found, you know, the Draymond combination and the death lineup that they had for all those years. It has not looked good. And, there's something to be figured out there because you can't have Steph going off for 50 and then still lose by double digits.
They were never in that game. It was basically a wire win for Phoenix. And I want to talk about the Warriors. Only I know we've talked about them a bunch on this podcast so far. You and I have, John and I have. And we know the issues at this point, right? It's the defense. We know Klay hasn't been the same guy. Poole hasn't been the same guy, even if the numbers look okay. And the bench has been a disaster. You know, they put Wiseman in the G League. It still doesn't help. But the reason I want to bring them up, you mentioned Steph goes off for 50 in Phoenix. Listen, I don't want to say a November game is going to define your season. And again, in a month, this team could make us look like idiots. But at the same time, the Warriors, 0-7 on the road. Okay, they're embarrassed the last time they play in Phoenix. This is a team that's always, always come out strong against teams that have beaten them recently. You know what I mean? Like, they're never ones to drop two in a row to the same team since this dynasty started. They go into Phoenix. Phoenix is missing Cam Johnson and Chris Paul, two starters.
Forgot about Cam. Yeah,
and they just whipped up on the Warriors. I mean, they had a double-digit lead for most of the night. They're comfortably ahead most of the night. Jock Landale, the podcast favorite, out here blocking Steph Curry on drives. Torrey Craig, Torrey Craig and Damian Lee have been playing their asses off. And I just, to me, that was a pretty inexcusable loss for the Warriors. You need that game. You're winless on the road. You're playing a conference rival who blew you out the last time you played, embarrassed you a little bit. And it, like outside of Steph, like, you know, so, like Draymond gets called for a foul and he's not even yelling at the ref. And I'm like, where's the passion? Where's the attitude? Yeah. What's going on? And I know a lot of Warriors fans think they need to make a trade. I'm curious, and I agree. I do think they need to make a move. They need to do something on the too. Bench. What do you think is the – what would you like to see them do?
There's a few things, but let me just start with this. It like there's I always have kind of complained about how on TNT, ESPN, they do the mic'd up sessions, and then – you like, hey, good play there, good play. You don't hear anything. I feel like two of the three or four most like illuminating sequences that I've seen have generally been Steve Kerr talking. Mm-hmm. And part of me wonders a little bit if that's because he has a TV background and so maybe he's cooler with the networks and maybe to some extent doesn't mind what's shared. Mm-hmm. But I'm always blown away, or not always, but sometimes blown away. I remember a couple of years ago, it was him talking to Durant about involving the rest of the offense more.
Right, right.
And I was like, oh, wow. Like, this is, you could tell there were fractures within the Durant relationship with the Warriors. It's like, that's really interesting that that was put out there mm-hmm. for all of us to see. So, granted, this wasn't that, but the other night during that game, he's basically just like, guys, come on, like,
yeah.
Rah, rah. He's just trying to get them to play with passion, any sort of passion, regardless of what it is that brings it about, because he can't get the defending champions to like play hard. And maybe it wasn't just that, but also he didn't say it directly to him, but it also felt like we're just out there playing. It feels like a rec game, like a pickup game. It felt like he was talking to Klay Thompson because Klay just kind of, granted, he has struggled. Granted, he's taken it on the chin as far as the criticism, whether it's from Charles Barkley, the media. You know, it has been a huge uphill climb for him. Mm-hmm. But the challenge with him is that he does so much to try to, like, will himself back into a rhythm that it's like there's not even another four guys out there up from right. his team. And it felt like, to some extent, when Kerr talked about the fact that we're playing as individuals, he's not talking about Steph, who's going off for 50. He's talking about Klay. So anyway, to that point, I am ready to say, I think, and it doesn't fix their defense necessarily, but I think it's a delicate thing. I think Klay should come off the bench. And like a lot of fans would say that. I'd like to think of myself as a little bit more measured than that. He's a Hall of Famer. I get it.
Yeah.
Maybe it's not permanent. Maybe it's like the Wiseman thing. And maybe it's difficult because maybe that dings Klay's confidence more. At right. a time where you don't want to do that to him.
So delicate. Mm-hmm.
But I'll tell you what, though. Like, Jordan Poole, if you look at the two, three games he's had, the best games this year, certainly one of them, one of the last ones he played, was a game he started and he went off for 36. And there's some games where he just doesn't get into a rhythm, and you can't really convince me that he's not going to be better playing off of Steph than he would be off the bench. Like, he's a good enough player to get it done off the bench. But, he has some really uneven performances when he's off the bench as opposed to just starting. And quite frankly, if Klay is going to shoot the way he's shooting and if he's going to force the shots anyway, I'd rather have him do that off the bench than have him do it with Steph and with Wiggins, who's been your second best player. I don't want to see him do that with Steph. Like Steph is the one chance he had. I think, was it Tim Kawakami had a stat the other day that they have yet to win a game where Steph wasn't at least a +7.
Crazy.
Plus minus. That's a crazy statistic. So yeah. I actually think it's time. And you know, just for people that haven't followed it or don't know what's really being said, Kerr has essentially said he's not doing that, or that he hasn't even looked into doing that. You know, because the starting lineup has been fine. Obviously the bench has been the biggest problem. Right. For this
and
so
it is, because the starting lineup has been pretty good, but that Phoenix game I thought was that's top competition. And again, even down two starters, Phoenix's starters were outplaying Golden State starters. They got up to a lead in the first quarter. Late in the second, they held it. Third, the quarter, they expanded the lead. Like, you know, as good as that lineup has been, you know, over the course of the season, over the course of the number of possessions, that's the kind of game where you need them to dominate, and they weren't able to do it. Defense was getting absolutely carved up. You know, you mentioned it. Kerr doesn't seem to have an interest, an appetite for bringing Clay off the bench. And that is an interesting team dynamic that they have going here, because Clay next year could be the last year of his deal. They've signed Poole long term. Poole obviously started for so much of last season. You right. have to wonder how he feels about coming off the bench again, especially as he sees Clay struggle.
Right.
The bench, I mean, they reworked the rotation. Anthony Lamb's getting minutes now. They need a shooting. You know, Wiseman's in the G League for a G League stint. I would really like to see them make a trade. I'm curious to see what they end up doing. I know that there was rumors that, you know, Jay Crowder, our old friend Jake Fisher, reporting that there was a three-team trade that some people thought was about to happen involving Jay Crowder. I have no idea if the Warriors were involved in that, but I think they also need to get some vets. Like, you know,
yeah.
I thought JaMychal Green would be better for this team. Like, when they signed him, I was like, oh my God, like, that's a steal. I thought he was so good.
Felt like
for the
an
Nuggets.
Unfair signing at the time.
Yeah,
right?
It really did feel like he can shoot.
In the same way that Boogie did a couple
yep.
years ago.
Yeah.
Except for more of a role player, obviously. Yeah. But
no, but yeah. no, I could not agree more. It was like the perfect 4-5 for this team. He can shoot, he can play with any right. of their bigs. I'm surprised he hasn't been as good, but it just feels like they need more vets, like some kind of injection of passion to like end the, like someone who's hungry for it. You know what I mean? Like, it's, again, like I'm trying not to overreact because, you know, I saw that thing again. The Bucks started 7-8 last year, but I don't see what the fix is right now in the current roster. Like, the starting five, I think, will always be good, but defensively, like, I they need some kind of injection.
I think Crowder actually would make sense for them, if only because of some of the passion and some of the toughness yeah. that he brings. I mean, he doesn't strike me as a great shooter. He's always been a little bit overrated as a shooter. Mm-hmm. Okay. Sometimes slightly below average, but a guy that I think the defenses respect enough to where they'll, you mm-hmm. know, they'll try to close out on him if they see him wide open. But like you said, like even when you're looking at even Draymond not really reacting to foul calls, yeah. at least Crowder will give you that. He's always going to have a reaction. He's always going to be the tough guy, you know, and frustrated and a little bit hot under the collar. I can't help but think, and granted, he wouldn't have even played if he were still on the team if they had paid him the money. Gary Payton II is a real absence for them, especially when you look at, and again, he hasn't played yet, but like the sorts of guys that the Blazers are thriving with are the sorts of players that I don't think the Warriors have enough of.
Yeah,
Wiggins, you know, has filled that role for them, and he's been better. Like, Wiggins could not play the rest of the season, and they've gotten so much more than their money's worth out of Andrew Wiggins. Even at a max level, on a max deal, he's just been so good for them. And, you know, where would they be without him? But they really, like him, Gary Payton II, and then a guy like Otto Porter, who, you know, it feels like to some extent maybe you're hoping that Lamb has replaced some yeah. of that. But they those two guys were big losses. And I'll say this, and then I'll leave it alone. My best friend, who like is a huge basketball fan and a very like, you know, former teammate of mine in junior high school, whatever, very knowledgeable about basketball. Like, he and I will have conversations that go for an hour on basketball. I'm a lot more analytically driven in addition to watching the game. I think he's more watching the game. And so it was really interesting that he texted me out of the blue one day, when he saw that some ESPN projection had the Warriors finishing eighth in the West. And he was like, Chris, this is so stupid, blah, 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 blah. And I was like, well, what model was it that used him? Or actually, no, he said Kevin Pelton had them eighth in the West. And I was like, oh, like he said he thinks they're going to finish eighth. And then when he looked at the description or the story more or whatever, he was like, oh, well, actually, what he said is that like his model had them finishing eighth, but he was like, I'm still ready to throw the whole model away because that's stupid. And like, uh-huh. as someone that's steeped in basketball and watching the game and stuff like that, you have to be kind of like, I was like, look, Pelton is really smart. And in fairness to Pelton, I think he went on the Low Post and said that he thought that it was off too, that he was surprised by that result too.
Uh-huh.
And what I was telling my friend is like, you don't throw a model out because of that. You might try to explain what it's seeing or what it's saying, but like a model is a model. And the whole point of it is that it kind of strips the team of what we think about it. And it's just taking into account the numbers and maybe, you know, the things that we're not noticing or that we're not thinking about. And what it probably showed is that, like a lot of models, when I was at 538, experience is built into that. And a lack of experience is built into that too. So the Warriors have, I don't know if they've bragged, it's not exactly light years, but they've talked for a couple of years now about the idea of melding this group of vets with this group of youngsters. And then they also let a couple of guys that were experienced enough walk from a championship team, and Peyton and Porter. And I mean, we're seeing some of the results of that, in addition to the team aging a little bit, in addition to the team being a little bit rusty between Clay and, you know, and Poole, and trying to figure out what role works best for them. It's not to say it was fully predictable, but it starts to make me wonder whether Pelton's model was actually spot on about some of what it was seeing. It was always a little bit strange to just kind of assume that this will work because the Warriors have a really good top end to their roster and they've got some young guys that have pedigree. That doesn't mean that they're going to be good. It doesn't mean that they're going to fit. So absolutely, they need another vet or two. I'll also say this, and I love him. Like, I understand I wouldn't have been itching to get him off the roster either, but you have a guy in Iguodala that really doesn't play. Like,
so, I mean they're having a lot of roster spots right now that are giving him nothing. Kuminga's right. Not giving him much. Iguodala's not giving anything. Wiseman, yeah.
You know, so I don't know what that looks like. I mean, part of me thinks that maybe they could try a little bit more of something, but they also might have already been doing it. Like the idea of playing mostly their vets and their key guys that you know can play together, and maybe playing one of their young guys at a time. Yeah. Saying that, like, look, we will score enough between Steph and Wiggins and the other guys. We can score enough. Just go out and play like we've lit you on fire from a standpoint of defense. We have to defend better, whether that's Kuminga, whether it's Moody, whatever. But it does feel like there's just been too much kind of maybe propaganda is the word, or just belief that because these young guys have watched
there was definitely, and I think I was guilty of it, there was an assumption that these guys were ready to step in and be contributors. And I definitely never bought the two timeline thing as like, oh, we're going to be the Spurs. And for the 15 years after Steph retires, we're also going to be great. And it's like, no. This only like works because you have Steph Curry. Yep. But I did think that a lot of these guys were going to be more ready to contribute than they were.
Yeah. I mean, and, you know, like, fair. The other thing I thought about last night before I went to bed as we were, you know, talking about the outline for this pod was, like, Wiseman came in and he had a really nice looking preseason. The first game in particular, I think he might not have missed a shot. He was getting a lot of attention because he had the year off and, you know, how does he look? Steph has a vertical lob threat now. What does that look like? Guys can look good in the preseason without being ready for, you know, especially after a year off. I remember Derrick Rose coming off the ACL for the first time and just lighting the league on fire in preseason. And he looked the part. So I think we're always really ready to just kind of, I mean, guys don't play hard in the preseason. And to some extent, when you dominate a preseason like that, it makes me wonder if those guys are just playing harder than everybody else. But, you know, it's not to say that I'm happy or anything to see this play out the way it is. I still want him to be productive.
Yeah.
I thought Nekias Duncan wrote a really, really smart column even before the Warriors decided to send him to the G League, you know, about the idea of maybe this just doesn't work.
Yeah.
And maybe the Warriors would be better off getting something for him. And maybe Wiseman would be somewhere better, would be better off if they just send him to a team that can allow him to develop. Because that's the other thing about the two timeline thing is like, you're not even giving these guys a full chance to really spread their wings and make mistakes, because particularly when you're behind the eight ball from a record standpoint, you don't have the, you can't afford to really give them.
Also, like, they play such an intricate style of basketball. Like, Wiseman needs to be somewhere where he can run 30 pick and rolls a night. Just roll hard, like, start small. Speaking of Kamikami tweets, he sent this during the Suns game. Wiseman, Kuminga, Moody, Pat Baldwin Jr., Ryan Rollins, like, Moody ended up getting in that game, but when he sent this tweet, like, none of those guys got minutes. That's five roster spots you're not getting anything from. Meanwhile, Iguodala's not playing. Clay hasn't been Clay. Like, there's just so many question marks up and down the roster. Again, I know we've talked about this a lot of time, but at this point, we've identified what the problems are. I think we both agree it's time for them to make a change. Chris, I didn't tell you about this, but I wanted to get to this email before we get out of here. First of all, I just want to acknowledge Greg, who sent us an email called Trailblazers Disrespect, even though I said I was buying stock in the Blazers on Monday, and he said it wasn't good enough. Apparently, I wasn't effusive enough in my praise about the Blazers, even though
they lost a really tough game last night.
We're also the only podcast, NBA podcast, I know that has a special segment dedicated to one team.
Right.
And that's support. So apparently that's not enough.
And we just did that last week, too.
Yeah. Anyway, this email comes in from Ezra. It says, NBA player signature celebration miss. What's up, Open Floor Globe? Loved hearing Rohan and Chris's discussion of NBA signature celebrations this week, but I think y'all missed one, and I want to hear your thoughts. Okay. Specifically, what's your take on the ice tray celebration? I, for one, am low on it. Low in all caps. First off, it's a celebration named after a kitchen appliance, ice tray, which isn't that cool. Secondly, the celebration itself is essentially Trae Young pantomiming what someone does when they say it's a bit nippy out today. Not exactly the most intimidating act.
This is so
funny. What are y'all's thoughts?
This is so
Ezra,
funny.
This email cracked me up, dude.
It's too good. It's just too good. I'll agree for the sake of, if for no other reason, going back to something I mentioned earlier.
So convincing.
Trae Young is shooting 30% from three, 31 if you want to round up, and his team is not much better. I mean, let me look really quickly. Are they the worst 3-point shooting team in the league so far? They are 27th in the league right now from a percentage.
Which is shocking.
Standpoint.
They could use Kevin.
They're
Herter,
also
huh?
dead last in attempts. Which is interesting. Dead last in makes, dead last in attempts. So from that standpoint, I'll say, yeah, it's a little bit overrated, if only because he doesn't get to use it much right now. You know, even though the team has done fine, it's a little bit surprising. Like, when you think about that team and some of the guys they have on it and the way that team was built, granted they lost Herter, but it's a team that you would expect to be knocking down a lot more threes, which maybe it bodes well for them that they've been as decent as they have been record-wise so far without knocking down those types of shots. John Collins has been kind of struggling from there too. And so it'll be interesting to see what happens with them. But I will say, even if I'm making a joke right now about how Trae Young has shot and the Hawks have shot, in the right moment, that's a damn good celebration. I mean,
The
stuff with the Knicks in that playoff series, like, that's priceless.
I'm with you. Like, on the surface, you're like, ice tray, is that cool? Blah, blah. But I like the tie-in with his name.
Absolutely.
And it's just, I love a simple, easy-to-execute celebration. You know, I think he doesn't overuse it either, which I like. It's like, you know, I think Steph, this isn't really a celebration, but Steph does the point to the sky after he hits every shot, basically, which is not quite the same thing. But, you know, Trey's not bringing it out all the time. He saves it for the big moments, which I think is important. Mm-hmm. And when you've hit some of the big shots he's hit, you got to do something. You can't, you know, like, he doesn't have great options. So I love the email. I love the energy. I respect people who hate, you know, I respect people who wake up early so they have extra time to be haters. I love the energy from Ezra, but I do think ultimately I'm pro that celebration. The Hawks are interesting. Pina's been trying to antagonize me since the summer about the Hawks winning the Southeast Division. And I know he did it. He brought that take to a popular basketball podcast that I won't acknowledge. But they're interesting. I don't know what to make of them because they've had some, you know, they beat the Bucks a couple times, but once without Trey, once when the Bucks didn't have Drew, and a lot of their wins have come against so-so teams. Like, I don't really know what to make the Hawks yet. That might be a team we have to discuss more at some point in the future, but they've been kind of weird.
15 games in, there's so many teams that I just don't know what to make of. I mean, the Knicks are at the top of that list too, where they, you know,
I think we were even talking about in our group text.
Okay, fair.
No, you're right.
But it's interesting though that they, now granted, they beat Denver without Jokic, but they, you know, they just went and won games in two places that they really haven't.
I mean, that Utah win was a nice win. That Utah win was
a nice
win. It was
a very nice win.
And so was the Denver one, frankly, even without Jokic. Brunson has been great. I know that. I think Brunson has been everything they could have asked for.
Yes. So it's, I mean, but there's just so many teams that, like, you, hell, half the teams that we thought were going to be the biggest tankers are within like a game or two of 500. And
the two game series have thrown everything off. Like, some teams have, like, you know, I think the Hawks have played like the Hornets and Pistons like four times already, like weird stuff like that. It's just
some season series are already over. It's a little strange, but I will say, I appreciate the league's effort with what they're doing to make the back to backs like that, and you know, the home and homes or whatever else. I do think that it's kind of weird to have them, just from the standpoint of,
yes,
like other people said, if you've got a key guy injured, that they miss both parts or half of a season series against a team because you're playing teams in succession like that is a little weird to me. And I am curious whether that
there are
plays
always
into things.
There are always unintended consequences of these decisions, and it's going to be fascinating to see how they play out. On that note, Chris, that'll do it for today's episode of Open Floor. Thank you again for shocking me to start this episode, but I think we recovered and made it. Thank you to all our listeners. Again, I appreciate everyone who listens to this podcast, hits us up about it. Thank you so much. Please keep your emails coming, openfloormail@gmail.com. Until the next episode, everyone, please continue to enjoy the NBA season.
At Nutrafol, we don't just help your hair, we help your body grow it. Because it's never just about your hair. It can be your job or your deodorant or your lunch or just normal life. That's why our whole body approach targets the key root causes of hair thinning. Discover your root causes and why we're the number one dermatologist recommended hair growth supplement brand at Nutrafol.com. That's Nutrafol.com. These statements have not been approved by the FDA. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease paid for by Nutraceutical Wellness, Inc.
Fall's here, and so are incredible sales at Tanger Outlets. Find must-have handbags, footwear, and all the latest fall arrivals, all at unbeatable savings. Shop top brands like Nike Factory, Crocs, J. Crew Factory, Coach, Gap Factory, Old Navy Outlet, Under Armour, and even more brands you love. Save more every time you shop with deals up to 70% off. Tanger Outlets, always on trend, always on sale. Plan your trip at Tanger.com.